I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, and ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie. We're going to be joined by Clermont's Australian fullback, Alex Newsome, in a little while to catch up on how their season's going, what it's like being coached by Christophe Aurias, what he makes of everything going on with Australian rugby at the moment, and much more, I'm sure. First day, Johnny, was a busy Six Nations period, but you've had a weekend off, so you're refreshed, revitalised. Good weekend. What have you been up to?
Refreshed, mate. 100%.
I'm glad one of us is.
Yeah, you're still absolutely battling. Mate, I had a nice one. Friday was social, caught up with friends, too many cocktails. Saturday was hungover mini rugby. Me, not Lockie. Then it was beach in the afternoon, and Sunday was more beach. Back to eating chocolatines, croissants in the morning, and then down to the beach for the sunshine. So, mate, recharged. Nice to get back, have some family time. It's been cool to get home. But you're looking at me a little bit funny in that you probably aren't feeling the same. How was your weekend?
I was more work, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, back-to-back Premiership games. But I've got two questions on what you just said. Nothing to do with rugby or anything. What's a chocolatine and what's your cocktail of choice?
I didn't have a choice. I was fed margaritas.
Okay, it's good.
Which were awesome. Again, for somebody that doesn't drink too much, five or six of them, oof. Strong. And a chocolatine. I can't believe we haven't crossed this topic. So a pain au chocolat.
Yeah, I know that.
So that's in the north. If you're in Paris, a pain au chocolat is a pain au chocolat. And if you are in the south of France, that is called a chocolatine. So that's how you cause a fight. If you get a Parisian in the south and he asks for a pain au chocolat from a baker, they might get a punch in the face. Similarly, if you get somebody from the south goes up and asks for a chocolatine in Paris, might start a fight. So a chocolatine, mate, is a fan's favourite. With the kids, it is a pain au chocolat in the south of France.
Wow, very interesting. You learn something new every day. Every day is a school day. And whilst you were scoffing chocolatines and drinking margaritas, did you watch any top 14?
I did, mate. I took in a few games. That's one of the perks of being back home. My seven-year-old with his top 14 sticker book is probably more into the top 14 than I am.
Do they still have sticker books now? It's like Panini,
mate,
top 14.
Panini, 100%, mate. So that was one of my career highlights at Montpellier, Cast and Bayonne, was when you got headshots. So it wasn't just for like a website. That went in the Panini sticker book. You got your own sticker, which for somebody who collected Rugby World Cup 1995 sticker books. It also had Euro 96 for football.
Yeah.
And then got them signed by all the players. Like to see my kids now doing that. It's pretty cool.
I imagine a Johnny Beattie is quite rare as well. There was lots of swaps going on there. Anyone got a Johnny Beattie?
Mate, that was the easiest swap you had in school. who wants another Johnny Beattie? Can't get rid of this guy. But mate, it's interesting because it just shows a different way for kids. And you didn't think about it when you're young, but for Lockie, who's seven, he is now knows all the positions, all the players, all the captains, their heights, their weight. Like he absolutely loves it. So it's just another way of getting them engaged. And then he can refer to them like he knows who the players are when he sees them on the TV. So yeah, he's mad for it. And it meant that we caught up on maybe three games at the weekend. And then the highlights together, which is his other favorite bit, is banging them on YouTube. So yeah, good weekend of rugby.
It's interesting because we do talk about the top 14 and how it is massive compared to a lot of other leagues. I can tell you there is no Premiership sticker album and you have to work quite hard to see the highlights, I think. So there you go, just shows you.
But do you know why?
Go on.
It's image rights and it's agents who get in the way and they want money for it. Whereas I think obviously the top 14 sell the rights very well to Canal Plus for TV, But in terms of image rights, there seems to be no blocker and the clubs and the players all buy in. But if you want visibility, if you want young players engaging with rugby from an early age, knowing who players are, buying in, supporting a team, you have to make the players familiar. And the top 14 does a really good job of doing that in France. Like, as somebody that works for World Rugby, I would love to see one at Rugby World Cups. You know, as a youngster, I just mentioned, I did the one at Rugby World Cup 1995 in South Africa. I had all the stickers, but they can't get them over the line because of the clash. It's a financial tug of war between agents, financial institutions, stakeholders, people wanting money for X, Y, and Z. So something to sort out. If I can get that sorted for the next Rugby World Cup in Australia, I'll be doing well. Or for England, 2025 for the girls in a couple of years. But yeah, a lot of work to be done to get them rolled out. But mate, they're awesome.
You've got a long list of things to work out. So we'll park that for now. Like, we could do a whole podcast on image rights and the things that need sorting out. But as a sticker, I imagine the most popular is probably that man who comes up every podcast we do, whatever format the game he's playing, Antoine Dupont. The primetime game on Sunday night.
Right.
He's on the bench. You're thinking he'll come on for a little cameo. Obviously, Tomáš Ramos goes down 4 minutes into the game. He comes on at 10, put him on anywhere. I got some stats for you, Johnny.
Well, I'm going to throw them at you. We'll compare stats. On you, or you go first. So, 4 minutes. Fortunately, Ramos is not a big injury. With Antoine as well, I find myself asking, what is his best position? Is he wasted at nine? Because when you see him with, maybe I'm being silly, but when you see him with time and space and people around him and the ability to play a little bit more, especially I've seen at sevens, he comes on at 10 and he creates absolute mayhem. He's such a threat. Everyone checks. Nobody puts line speed, the space outside, space inside. He can, like, what were his stats? I'll go through some of the ones. Like, 8 defenders beaten. So 8 tackle breaks I had.
I got 11. So it just depends where you look, doesn't it?
2 clean line breaks, 23 carries in the game. There were 18 offloads in the game. I don't know how many were his, but a decent chunk. And one of them was absolute pearler to set up Matisse Labelle with, like, an out-the-door back pass. He eliminated 3 defenders to set up Matisse Labelle for his try.
That clip was crazy. It wasn't just the offload. He palms someone off in the face pretty much. It gets rid of him. He takes three men out with that arcing run. And then it's the deftness of hand, not just the offload, but he switches it from his right to his left or left to his right and then flips it out of the back. So, I mean, as a defender, how are you supposed to keep track of what's going on there? I've no idea.
Mate, he's an absolute freak. And he's the best player in the game by a country mile. We're lucky to have him. And I'm just lucky I don't have to defend him anymore because I was made to look very silly by him at Cast. And it's great to see him do it. And the weird thing is, well, not weird, but it's week in, week out. Like, that's the thing. Like, we're so lucky that he hasn't had a big injury or he hasn't been out of the game for a long time. He's gone over to other sports and played sevens and he's ripped that up as well. So long may continue. And that's it. Mini rugby down here on a Saturday morning, the amount of Toulouse, we're not in Toulouse, we're 3.5 hours from Toulouse, but the amount of Toulouse jerseys, number 9 and Dupont on the back, like, it's unbelievable the effect that he's had on the game. He's an absolute genius. So another freakish game. And also, they probably deserve to win that game. I think they were, at one point, they were 17-0 down. They came back to 24-28. They were leading by 4. And Beauchaton has just stepped a foot and touched. He scores the winner, but it was clearly in touch. I don't know how it's been given, but it was weird. Like, Dupont back, but that game in general, 42,000 people at the Matmut in Bordeaux, electric atmosphere, like, running, attacking rugby from both sides. The top 14 is back, Six Nations is over, but the quality of that game and some of the others at the weekend were absolutely ridiculous.
And we were comparing attacking stats, but he also had a try-saving tackle where he knocked the ball out of someone's hands as well. So both sides of the ball.
Of course he did.
We can get a bit blasé about how good he is. You sort of spoke about it there. It is a bit like Finn Russell calls himself the Messi of rugby, tongue-in-cheek. We love Finn. But it is like that period, isn't it? I mean, you never know when it's going to come to an end. You can get an injury, it can change things. But we do need to appreciate how good he is week in, week out, and just how fun this period is. Because we had it in different sports, superstars around, and sometimes you can kind of, it can become normal, but it's not normal. Like, we should appreciate it.
It's not. And I can remember waking up in the morning and watching Super Rugby and seeing Jonah Lomu. And I honestly can't remember somebody that's had such an effect since Jonah. I mean, we've had some fantastic individuals, but consistently breaking the game, creative, rapid, fun to watch. He's just one of those players that wants to make you watch the game. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Enjoy him while he's here. We're lucky to be here watching him in his prime, and long may it continue.
Maybe slightly different from Antoine. Oyinna against Perpignan. We said it last week. That is so important. And I think it's probably fair to say after they lost by a point, Oyun Erugan, right?
I don't want to say it, but yeah, I think so. By a point to Perpignan, their closest rival for 14th spot. And you look down the fixture list now and it doesn't get easier for them. They've got a real nasty run of games as well. So as much as I wanted them to win, to stay into the hunt and to make it go right down to the last game, and they still will, they'll still fight to believe, but it's incredibly difficult. Now that home loss to Perpignan by 1 point makes it kind of gloomy, which is desperate for them because they're a good bunch and they've got some really talented players, decent coach as well in Joel Abd, but it's going to be a hard run in now for Oyun.
Montpellier, Johnny, load of consecutive wins recently. They were in great form. They went to Toulon. What happened?
I don't know, mate. They were utterly abject, which is strange because they stuck out a very decent side. Toulon is one of those places as well. Like, and Pierre Mignoni's spoken about it at length this year. They've struggled to find their identity, how they want to play. The change room wasn't settled. But when that place rocks, when Mayol is on fire, it's a really hard place to pitch up and perform. Intimidating. Crowd gets on your back. They scored 8 tries at the weekend, mate. 8 tries. 54-7. And they were cruising. Every offload was sticking. The ball's dry. The sun's back out. Everything stuck for Toulon and absolutely nothing came together for Montpellier. It was one of those games where they wanted to work their way back into the game. So they pushed an offload. Knock on. Everything resulted in an outcome for Toulon. It's one of those horrible games. So yeah, it has been a great run for Montpellier, but that was a big bump back down to earth, I would say. And the happiest man was clearly Pierre Mignoni, who had said, look, I didn't know where the side was. I didn't know where the culture had gone. He's not saying it's back and everything's clicked back into place, but that's a huge win, like 50 plus points against the Montpellier side, recent champions, packed full of stars. And it was hard to watch as a former Montpellier player. It was difficult. So you got to hope they find that bit of consistency and they come back and they're tougher to break down and beat away from home. Because yeah, it wasn't a good look at the weekend and Toulon were rampant.
That was a blowout. Aside from that, the others were all really tight games and there were some massive results in terms of where teams are going to finish in the table. We were talking recently about how Racing had dropped off massively from their start to the season and how they were leading the pack. They were looking brilliant under Lancaster. Obviously, you're always going to get a blip and it's how you come out of that. A huge result for them away at Cast.
Yeah, and Cast isn't an easy place to go either. I don't think it's any coincidence that Lugarek comes back. The quality, the speed of the ball goes up a notch. They're just a bit more consistent ball in hand and they managed to notch up a couple of outstanding tries away from home. And yeah, it's still transition for Racing, but to pick up a 2-point win away from home on the road in a place that they never really have too much joy, that's a big notch. They'll be delighted. And as will Lancaster, getting a couple of players back, it just shows how big a difference it makes when they are away during the Six Nations and during these double weekends. So Lugarek, I thought, was absolutely outstanding. His kicking game, which isn't something we talk about too often, even under severe pressure, he kicked Cast to death. And he was the instigator for a couple of the big moments in the game as well. Finding space, time, creating offloads. Wade got in for a really decent finish as well. He's heading back to Gloucester next season, but still scoring tries. He was outstanding. And yeah, for Racing, the hunt for that top six spot continues. And yeah, again, they were great to watch. I don't think it's coincidental either that the horrible weather of November, December has just left us. The Six Nations finished. The sun's coming back out. And the quality of the rugby has just gone up a notch again. So hopefully from now on, we're going to be spoilt. But mate, it was a pretty special weekend of top 14 rugby.
You called this one as well. I don't know why I questioned it, probably because of the power and the fact that La Rochelle are coming back into their own. I know Bayonne just don't lose at home, but they didn't again.
I think it's might get the date out by a bit, but I think the last time they lost at home in the top 14 was January 2022.
Wow.
Which is ridiculous. I think they're 18 plus, like they're nearly 20 games unbeaten at home in the comp. And again, like we just talked about Toulon, but it's such a special place to go. And you're double European champions, but it's a leveler. And when you get the crowd on your back, there's an influence on the referee as well. 50-50s go the way the home crowd. And Bayonne are scrappy. They play a decent brand of rugby. They hold onto ball. Cami Lopez pulling strings, creating and pulling tries out of God knows where, like one of the ones at the weekend, he nearly created another one with a dummy drop goal, which in any other competition wouldn't go. But it's that little bit of magic of, I think he dummied Greg, makes a half line break, grubbers it through, and he's that far completing for Maury in another try. But they're pragmatic. They plug away. They're very decent. They're hard to break down. They dominated the first period. And it's La Rochelle we're talking about. Latu had a really bad day at the office at line at time. I think he had something like 4 or 5 in the first half squint throws, which kind of nullified any pressure that La Rochelle tried to build. They actually, and again, this probably should have been their first home loss in 18 months. Hastoy had a penalty to win the game with a minute on the clock and he missed it. And I think if that's a Thomas Ramos or it's another player with a slightly more efficient kicking game, a Jaminé, they win the game, but they just couldn't together pull enough pressure together to beat Bayonne, who are just so stuffy and hard to break down. So yeah, mate, they trudge on. They're not looking good for top six. If they manage to pick up an away win, they've knocked over essentially all the big boys at home in the top 14 in Bayonne. And yeah, they're looking good. Manu Tuilagi is well announced for next year. They're only going to get better. They're adding quality slowly but surely. And yeah, they're seriously impressive.
And the other one, we'll chat to our guest about it, but right in the sort of middle of the pack where we know how tight it is in the top 14, one win and you can be looking up rather than down, et cetera, et cetera. Clermont now find themselves 5 points above that 13th place in the dreaded access match, but now only 4 points off the final playoff place. It's mental, but that was huge for them because they lose that and then all of a sudden it's officially a relegation battle, I guess. Whereas now you can pitch it either way.
Yeah, and I'm sure Alex is going to give us more on the inner workings of how the club is working under Christoph Urios, and he's still finding his feet, and there's been a lot of questions asked of the playing group and the staff as well. But I mean, you're right to your point. There's so little between top six and 13th. It is ridiculous. But then that is the jeopardy that we love in this competition. It always goes down right to last weekend. We have no idea who's going to qualify. And a big win like that does a lot for your confidence. That could be, again, a shot in the arm that they need, that's been required, that kicks them on. They now go away and they pick up something on the road. All of a sudden, you're straight in that top six race. So looking forward to finding out how he's been finding it. He obviously re-signed his contract. He's extended. He seems to be enjoying his time there. But where are they going to finish? Who knows? But looking forward to watching them. Because the weekend, again, with my mate, the old boy, Urda Bijeta at 10, they look pretty tasty. So looking forward to hearing how Alex is finding it.
Yeah, we'll get Alex's thought in a minute. We should find out what your meter moment of the week is first, though, Johnny.
Well, we kind of spoke a little bit about Bordeaux-Toulouse. That was a phenomenal game of rugby. Great spectacle. Fans absolutely loved it. 40,000+ in the stadium. But I've given it to Toulon just because, like, different chats with Mathieu Bastreau back and forward. They've been asking so many questions internally. What can we do better? How can we improve? And that's a huge one for them to smash 50 points past Montpellier for the club, for Pierre Mignoni, who's been under pressure, for the supporters who haven't enjoyed the first 6 months of this year. It's comprehensive. It was gnarly, and they were incredibly impressive to watch. So Toulon absolutely spanking Montpellier.
Hard to argue with that. That was Johnny's Meter moment of the week, and Meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 20 million cooks better. Their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan, and you can get your hands on one at meter.com. Plus, you can get 10% off any full-price item. All you have to do is enter the code FrenchPod10 at checkout. That's FrenchPod10, and you'll get 10% off any full-price item at meter.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's get our guest on now then. And after a huge win for them over Poe at the weekend, we can have a chat with Clermont's Australian fullback, Alex Newsome. How you doing?
Going well, boys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Mentioned it there. Massive win at the weekend. We were chatting earlier on about how it is as tight as it's ever been in the top 14. So you're kind of, is it a lot more positive after the weekend?
Yeah, it is. It is, boys. Yeah, it was one of those things before the game. No one wanted to say it, but I think if we lost that one, we would have been in a bit of strife. We had a really tough month over February. Before that, we had a good little period, but you boys said it, the comp's amazing, so tight. And if you have a poor couple of weeks, you can end up right at the bottom of that ladder.
It's been a strange season for Clermont. Would that be fair to say? Like, you've been there a few seasons now. You've extended your deal. You kind of know the landscape of the top 14. And Clermont's a huge beast, right? Historically, it's one of the biggest clubs. But you just sort of touched on it. This season's been on a sort of a knife edge. Can you sort of place a finger on why? Like, why do you think it's been a bit more of a struggle this season or the past couple of seasons?
Oh, I'm not sure. I think, it's my second year here. And, yeah, last year was very eventful with Jono getting sacked and Christoph coming in. So a few changes there. But we had a few – this year we've had a few tough games at home against Bordeaux and Toulon. We've lost right at the end of the game, which we've buggered those couple of games up. But – I think the competition is so tight. If you're not on your game, then anyone can beat anyone. So unfortunately, we had a couple of mishaps there. We went to Paris and we're winning the whole game and then they scored a try late to even it up. Yeah, it's just been one of those seasons where we've been very close, but a couple of results haven't gone our way. But in the same breath, we've had some good performances along the way. So we just got to stay focused and there's still plenty of footy to play.
This weekend, case in point, right? Poole have been flying high. That's a huge win, and that totally changes the dynamic. You know how big confidence is in this competition. It's ridiculous. For you as well, another decent game. You won a head-to-head against Jack Maddox, another Aussie bat, another fullback, who I'm assuming you know a little bit from back home. So talk us through the game and how important that was to notch up four more points.
Yeah, huge grudge match against Mad Dog. One of my good mates, actually. Our rugby club in Sydney, shout out to the Beasties there, Eastern Suburbs. We've been playing together or against each other for 10 years now. So there was a little bit of chat leading up to the game. And he got me earlier in the year. He actually didn't play, so that doesn't count for him. But important win for us. They sent a strong side too. So they obviously were coming to looking to beat us on our home turf, knowing that we had dropped a few games at home so far this year. But yeah, always good to get one up in a grudge match against Jack.
Has Jack been quieter afterwards or is the chat still there?
Yeah, mate, shut up, Jack.
The reason I was so tired on Sunday is him and his fiance actually stayed here in Clermont after the game. We had a few quiets nice. After the game. So, it's good. It's with all the foreigners, I've got a couple of mates over here playing in France. So, whenever you can catch up post game, it's always a bit of fun. It's everyone's in the same sort of scenario, living away from home. So, yeah, it's good he could hang around after the game and could give him a bit of stick. He didn't shout dinner though, unfortunately, on Saturday. I thought that was a bit poor.
You mentioned the home form. Obviously, it's massive in France for everyone. Historically, that's what Clermont's been built on. No one wants to go to the massive Sun Trail. The home form has been amazing. It's probably slightly less so in the last few years, but it's still something that every club in France is built on. Is that something you've spoken about because of those home defeats or not?
A little bit, I think. I guess coming from Super Rugby, that's something that I was completely unaware of, the massive emphasis of winning at home and winning in front of your people, which I think is a really sort of good principle. But on the flip side of that, it's important not to give up your away games as well. And I guess last year we were pretty good at home and ordinary away. This year sort of flipped. We've won a few away games and dropped a couple of tight ones at home. The really strong point about Clermont is our crowd and our public are just unreal. Like every game is packed out at the Marcel Michelin, and it's something that I've just absolutely been blown away with. So it's been disappointing to drop a couple, but whenever we are confident whenever we play at home, and it's just been good to have that win on the weekend to sort of start afresh again and keep building.
It's without a doubt one of the most intimidating places to go in the top 14. Like, always had such a big team, well coached, and the crowd is so pumped. And we actually haven't had anyone from Clermont on the pod for a while. So again, this is your second season. Can you give us an insight into the club, the culture, and where you feel it is right now? Because it is such a big piece of rugby culture.
Yeah, well, in my last year at the Tars, Jamie Roberts came and played a year with us. And when I signed, he said, mate, that's unreal. You're going to love it. Probably one of the best crowds, he said, up there with Millennium for him. And I was like, fuck, that's a big statement coming from a bloke of his stature. And then I remember that my first home game, I think it was Poe last year, and Damien Penno scored this freak try at the end where he kicked the ball in behind, ran 50 metres, regathered and scored. And they do that thing where everyone repeats, like, after he scores, like, Damien Penno. And I thought it was just for him. Obviously, they do it, whoever scores. I was like, I called my dad up after the game. I was like, fuck, I think this bloke's a pretty big deal. He scored these tries and the whole crowd's chanting his name. But yeah, it's huge, mate. It's obviously, I think, back in the day, from what I understand, Clermont was such a powerhouse, still is. Now, a lot of other teams have caught up, right? The competition's so tight, as we've mentioned. Other teams are a lot more competitive, but that hasn't changed the fact that our crowd is amazing. And there's a lot of expectation, as you said, speaking about the culture of the club and all the French guys talk about. There's a lot of expectation playing for Clermont that, you know, you rise to the top, and we want to be right at the top of that ladder, which we haven't been for the last couple of years. So, as I said, that's the expectation and that's our objective.
Johnny mentioned the culture of the club and where it's at the moment. You spoke about how last season there was a big shift, clearly. Christophe Aurier coming in, who Johnny knows well. Give us a word on what he's like as a boss and how different it is, I guess, under him compared to the previous era. Johnny's smiling already, I can see, so he knows Christophe.
Yeah, I tell you what, the French has had the French lessons have had to go up a notch because he doesn't speak any English. No, I've been enjoying working under him. He's a guy who's got clearly defined values, and everything we do is based on hard work, which, you know, I agree with. And I think the fundamentals of rugby doesn't change whether you're playing in Japan, bloody Sydney, or in Clermont. So I think he's got a very clear idea of what works and the fundamentals. And look, as we've had a few difficulties so far in the season, but so is every team. But yeah, as I said, Christophe, he's got clearly defined values of how he wants his team to play, and everything's based on sort of working hard. And yeah, I've been enjoying working under him.
And how have the boys adapted to the change? Because like Christophe is very different, right? It can be almost, I don't want to say military, but a little bit, it is a little bit military sometimes, in that there's a dress code, there's fines, there's, you know, it's very simple, but like Angles were kind of used to it. But the Frenchies don't always enjoy it. That's the sort of simple nature of it. So how have they reacted? Have they bought in? Are they enjoying it?
No, they are. The other thing about him is he can be quite emotional, as you know, John. But I think the French as a species are quite emotional, aren't they? All compared to us Anglos. So, you know, he'll have the odd thing where if he's not happy with the session, he'll let you know about it. If you're in a huddle at the end of training and someone's not listening, he'll just walk off and then sort of leave it to us. But I think he's very calculated. He might seem, I guess, emotional to the naked eye in front of us, but everything he does is very calculated, and he's very well prepared all the time, which is something I respect about him. He runs a tight ship, and sometimes he can, be quite emotional and very military-driven, but I think at the end of the day, he's got very good fundamentals and knows what wins games, so prepared to back him.
You mentioned that emotional nature. It always seems to weigh with French clubs, and we have people on here, and they're quite open about what happens behind the scenes. Every time a club loses a few in a row, there seem to be almost, I mean, the media would describe them as crisis talks. They're probably not behind the scenes, but there's always like a kind of the players, the staff get together. Obviously, you're out of that now, and you had a good period earlier on in the season, but you did go through a sticky patch. Was there that kind of coming together behind the scenes, you know, in the past few weeks and months?
Yeah, our sticky buddy period was only a few weeks ago, so it's not that long ago. But same as every club, you have winners, what's the saying? Bloody losers have meetings, winners have parties. So
yeah,
we've had a lot of sort of internal review and players coming together and voicing their opinions, and the coach is really good. They respond to that and listen to that, and we've made a couple of changes in the last couple of weeks, which you know, I think are working. The other thing Christophe does, he's not afraid of challenging players directly before games. You know, he expects our best players to play the best, and if he feels like, you know, you're not performing or you need to a bit of a cattle prodder in the backside, he'll happily give that to you. So, which, you know, I think's fair enough.
Mate, 100%. And I've written down right at the start, you said, more parties, less meetings, which I think everyone wants. Like, there's nobody to challenge that 100%. And just a bit on the squad dynamic, because you've got such a mixed squad. You've got like Yato, Fritz Lee, who's a good man. He's been there for years. Sebastian Bezzi, you've got Rabah Slimani. You've got so many different boys. So like, you must have a good crack.
Oh, we've got a great crew of lads, mate. It's so much experience. It's sort of one thing in the top 14. Nearly every side's got a starting 15 of internationals. So look, we're no different. We got a lot of foreigners. We actually got one of the highest sort of non-GIF quotas in the, averages in the comp. So we've got guys from Argentina, Fiji, a few Aussies in there, some Kiwis, which as you mentioned, has been there for over 10 years. And the experienced lads, you know, I've got a guy like Jules Pliss on there who this year isn't playing every week, but a number of caps for France. He's won the Brennus. So yeah, we've got great depth, and that helps on and off the field.
None more experienced than Benjamin Odepsheta, who I reckon was probably about 35 when Johnny was playing with him. So,
mate, he had hair when I played with him. He's fully gone now.
He looks about 45, doesn't he? You won't mind me saying that.
But that's you being kind. I was going to go 55. How's Benji going?
Oh, he's unreal. He carries on like he's a 21-year-old, mate. He's obviously, he's worked with our staff a fair bit. So, you know, like Christoph's regime, everyone's sort of making sure they're on their best behaviour. And Benji's come in. Obviously, I didn't know him. First year at the club. And he's lippy, like a 21-year-old going at all the different coaches. And it's great. You know, it kind of just calms the environment down and makes everyone relax a little bit when they see, you know, an experienced guy like him who knows the balance of when to have fun. But when he crosses that white line, he's like a dog off a chain for a little fella. He's, I don't know if you watched the game on the weekend, I think he made 17 or 18 tackles there. And off every line out there running straight at him, and he's putting his body in some dark places.
Mate, he's an absolute freak show. And you're right, like weirdly, he's totally under the radar. Like if you weren't watching Top 14, you would have never heard of this guy. But off the back of his performances for Cast, he got picked for Argentina, got a few tests there. But almost the best bit about Benji is that sort of morale. He's just there to sort of lift everyone up, dick around, have fun. And I imagine, like you mentioned, we talked just there briefly, that there's been some sticky days, right? And Raka was talking about like online bullying. Benji as well, as Tuggy's handle, like we've caught some serious shit, but it takes characters like that with that strength to A, put their arm around Raka and look after him, but also get through it and drag the rest of the squad with him. So he'll be priceless for you boys.
Oh, for sure. And I think that's a big reason why Christoph and the coaches recruited him to come to Clermont, because they knew he's that competitive character that can really bring his peers along with him. I remember we played Cast at home last year. We won. Pasili scored like 3 tries or something as he attended to do. And someone offloaded. I went through a little gap and went the draw and passed to Pasili to score his third. And about 2 seconds after I passed the ball, I got fucking smashed in the ribs. And I got up and it was Erta Paletta, who was fucking obviously just that filthy that his team was losing. And he just thought he'd give one to the Aussie fullback on the way home. So I made sure I let him know about that when he came to Clermont this year.
And we've been joking about his age, Johnny. He is actually older than you, isn't he?
He better be. I bloody hope he is, because he looks about 10 years older, but he can't. I think he's got to be younger than me by. Okay, I'm 38.
He's 38, isn't he?
I think 38 as well. Must be not lying it.
Terrible. It's borderline, but he's still trucking.
When I think about playing rugby for another 10 years, I don't know. It's a pretty outrageous thought, but nah, good on him.
And obviously, if people watch you in the top 14, I think you've played the odd game on the wing, maybe once at centre, but generally people know you as a fullback. But it hasn't always been that way, has it? You've played a lot on the wing in Super Rugby. And am I right in saying if you'd have stayed there, they maybe saw you as a centre moving forward? So is it just the way it's fallen that you've been a fullback, or is that always where you've wanted to play?
Well, it took me sort of a while to figure it out. As you mentioned, I played a lot of 13 coming through the junior sort of ranks, and also a lot of on the wing at Super Rugby. I've always enjoyed playing 15, but there were some great sort of 15s in front of me back there with Israel Folau and Curly Beale, a couple of guys who have done a little bit. And then I played a full, my last year at the Tars, I played a consistent year at 15 and then obviously came to Clermont. But yeah, it's something that I've really been enjoying, and I think I've found my position now. Just a great spot on the field where you get a license to roam and a lot of decision-making to do. So yeah, I've been really enjoying it.
And you've come over fairly young as well. So how did that move to the top 14 and to Clermont particularly come about?
Well, to be honest, I wasn't getting picked for the Wallabies, so I'd have played 6 years solid of Super Rugby and I was looking for a change. I sort of didn't feel like I was playing my best footy. Felt like I needed a change to reinvigorate myself. And Clermont came through and jumped at the opportunity. And I think, obviously knowing how strong the top 14 is. And I think for me, getting away from Australia where you sort of always sort of thinking about who you're competing with to try and make that Wallaby squad and having that sort of hang over your head. I've just felt like I'm playing a lot freer and playing each game on its merits and obviously playing and learning off a lot of unreal players. So, have a look back.
How close did you get to the Wallabies?
I had one Australia A game. That was it. So, it wasn't in the mix at all.
We speak to quite a lot of people who have the same experience. They come over to France and they often excel because of that freedom and they're frustrated by a lack of international opportunities. Were they quite open in the dialogue with you? Were they keeping tabs on you? Were they giving you information or did you feel like the door was closed?
Oh, to be fair, I don't feel like I was warranting selection. I don't feel like I was playing my best footy. So that was sort of the motive for me. I was looking for an avenue to really improve my game and play to my potential, essentially. And I think, I felt like I've improved as a player since I've come over here and continually looking to improve. So, as I said, I've only been playing 15 consistently for a few years now. And just trying to keep building every week and trying to be successful with Clermont.
Mate, you're ripping it up now. So as an Aussie and a passionate one, who I'd imagine one day might like to get involved back in the Wallaby mix, what did you make of the World Cup? Sitting in France and watching it, from selection to games to performance, like unload. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it's just disappointing. Obviously, I was in the stand there at St. Etienne for a couple of games on the piss. So I was there very much as a supporter. Obviously, got a few mates in that side and was there to support them. But just disappointing. In terms of some selections, I probably didn't feel like we had our best team on the park, which I don't think helped. And also, with the results not going our way, it was just disappointing as an Australian to see. But I've been watching a lot of Super Rugby recently. I think a lot of the sides there are going really well. And with some exciting events coming up in the future, Lions next year, World Cup in a few years. Look, I think Australia rugby will certainly get back to where it needs to be.
You mentioned you were in St. Etienne. You obviously know a lot of the players. Did any of them say what it was like in camp? I mean, I don't expect you to expose all the details behind the scenes, but it didn't look like a happy camp.
No, I think, the guys who were playing obviously were getting backed by Eddie, so they might have had different experiences to guys who were left out. I know there was reports of some of his communication being quite poor with some guys who he left out of the squad, which I guess is case by case. So just depends, what it's like being in squads. Like if you're getting picked, you're obviously happy, but the whole vibe of the thing might have been a little bit on the eggshells, and obviously results followed that way.
It's changed quickly though. A former Clermont man is now in the hot seat. How do you reckon Joe Schmidt's going to go? Because he's a coach that I've admired forever. Like backs coach at Clermont, head coach at Ireland, Leinster. I thought he's phenomenal. How do you reckon he'll get on with this Australian side?
Yeah, I think he's going to be, he's obviously a very well-credentialed guy all across the world, very well-respected. I saw Swoop and the boys on the Kick On, Kick Off podcast. I know if you've seen that, did an interview with him the other day. Came across very well, very personable, sense of humour. So I've never worked under him. Some of the guys who are Fritz, some of the old bulls left at Clermont, obviously have had a little bit to do with him. So, as a fan of Australian rugby, I'm hoping he does really well. Plenty of talent in Australian rugby, whether it's playing, in Australia or anywhere around the world. I think we've got the talent there. So it's just a matter of him getting a program up and going, and hopefully we can clean sweep the Lions next year.
Easy, I was going to ask you that. Is that a genuine confidence or is that a bit of Australian bravado?
Oh, mate, if you've got no confidence, you've got nothing. So, I'll back Schmitty.
You're right that there is a lot of things to look forward to in Australian rugby. We mentioned the Lions tour there, obviously the World Cup a couple of years after that. So he's got a big job on his hands. Everyone knows that, but there are huge carrots ahead of him. A lot has been spoken about the problems in Australian rugby in recent years. As someone now on the outside who might be back on the inside one day, if you could do one thing to make things better, What would it be?
I just think from a selection point of view, from the Wallaby level, obviously the majority of revenue, majority of eyeballs is on our top team, as it is in every nation. I think they've really got to prioritize that top level. So I don't believe that they should impose a rule of selection on Joe Smith. Case by case is my belief with him. Like, obviously, I believe he should favour the guys who are playing in his country, in Australia. But it should be case by case. I wouldn't want to put any, you know, certain Gitto law or any certain cap law on him. I wouldn't restrict him. I'd just back him to make decisions and really prioritise that top level for Australian rugby, because in Australia, the market is, there's so much competition with rugby league, AFL, obviously football's there. So where our population is not as big as a lot of these European nations. So for eyeballs and for crowds, there's a lot of competition and people want to back winners. So we really just need to find that formula where the Wallabies can be winning week in, week out.
Basically, change the selection policy and change the fullback, and they should be sweet. That's what we're saying. Mate, seriously, it's going to be a golden decade. Like, you've got Lions short-term to focus the mind, and everyone keeps saying it's the golden decade for green and gold. Rugby is going to be absolutely massive. A home World Cup for Australia in 2027. So surely that must help. In terms of recruitment, if you're looking for cross-code people to come over, you're looking to stimulate, bring people into the game, get participation up, and then compete for a World Cup. This has to be the cycle that Rugby Australia finds its way back to its former glories, because it was an absolute powerhouse of world rugby previously.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, in the 90s, I come from a rugby family. My old man speaks about the glory days, those World Cups in the 90s, and just the success they had. So there's a lot of rusted on Wallaby supporters, rugby union supporters throughout Australia, who potentially have been disenchanted by a lack of results over recent times. But make no mistake, they will support if the success comes and if they believe in the management of the game from a grassroots level coming through to the top. So massive challenge for Phil Waugh and for everyone involved there at Rugby Australia. But what an opportunity over the next sort of 5 or 6 years to get it right.
Right, that was some serious rugby chat. You mentioned your family, and I'm right in saying you grew up in the outback, essentially, in Australia, surrounded by sort of cattle, farming, that kind of background. I've read your Wikipedia page. It says there is a statue of you at a local camp draft grounds where you're from, near Dundee in Australia. That's bollocks, right? Is that one of your mates having a laugh, or is that real?
Yeah, it's a few local lads getting a bit liberal on the Wikipedia page, I think.
Explain to us what camp drafting is anyway.
Camp drafting, yeah, I knew you wouldn't know what that is. So that's actually my family's hobby back home. It's a sport where you're on a horse and you have to separate one cow from a whole mob and demonstrate your horsemanship abilities to keep this cow separated from the mob and then take it around sort of a figure of eight course whilst being judged. You get scored out of 100 points with your score depending on your speed and your horsemanship. And obviously these cows have got a mind of their own, so they'll part in all different bloody directions. But yeah, it's just like it's based on the Australian outback sort of way of life. And it's a sort of unique Australian sport, which my family love. And sort of ties in with our day-to-day operations. We've got a Angus beef sort of operation at home. So we don't use any motorbikes to muster our cattle. We use all horses. So it's just ties in with that.
And you were so good at camp drafting, they built a statue of you.
Oh, I wish, boys. I wish. I'd rather get one out the front of Stade Marcel Michelin, like Aurelien Rougerie for winning a Brennus one day. So we'll work on that one first.
How do you think Johnny would get on at camp drafting? Because recently he took Cobus Reinach out on horseback somewhere, and he's always filming these features for World Rugby Now. So I'm Johnny. I'm spitballing here. I'm an ideas man. You and Alex Neeson doing some camp drafting near Claremont somewhere?
Mate, sign me up. The only thing is, if there's some sort of scoring system, I'm going to get a negative 100. If it's out of 100, I'll be getting minuses. But what I took from that was, you've reared Angus beef. You're from Dundee. So I'm asking this on behalf of all Scots. Are you actually Scottish? Can you qualify and play for Scotland?
Oh, I wish Demo's somehow pulled a few strings to get over there. So it can't be that hard, can it? I had some bloke message me on Instagram the other day saying he read somewhere online that I had Welsh heritage. And I said, mate, if you can fucking find it, I'll be all right over there. I think my ancestors came over in chains from England back in the day, so for probably stealing a loaf of bread or something. So might be a bit further down the track.
And you mentioned that's Jack Dempsey, as you were referring to, right? Like, so what have you made of his career choice in that, what was it, 14, 15 caps of the Wallabies, found ancestry, but essentially like went back and had to re-qualify and play for Scotland. Is that something that more and more boys are talking about, like switching between T1 countries if the opportunity presents itself? Is that realistic or is that just like a one-off move?
Oh, I think it's one of the greatest rule changes that we've seen in recent times in the rugby. Just you saw in the most recent World Cup, to get, you see with the Pacific Islander nations, all the best players in the world. You got a guy like George Moala, who's, you know, one of the most powerful 12s in world rugby, played a few games for the All Blacks. They go to France for an opportunity, get him back on the international stage. You know, that's what's happened with Demo. He obviously wasn't getting selected for Wallabies at the time and he had the Scottish heritage. So it's just fantastic to see him kick off his international career again. Actually ducked over to Dublin last weekend to watch him play against the Irish. So I think it's a great rule change and great for the sport.
He's a half-decent player as well, to be fair. He makes a decent shift and he makes a real difference to that Scottish back row. He brings an edge to it and a ball-carrying dynamism that we probably don't have. So, like, you consider Welsh, you've got ancestors that have stolen bread, so maybe English. If you could find somebody from Dundee who played for Scotland. All joking aside, if you had your choice and you could pick up and play for the Wallabies tomorrow or you were drafted back into camp, would the Wallabies still be the dream or would you be open to anything?
Oh, I think 100%, mate. I think any Australian rugby player, the goal needs to be to play for your country. You know, I don't think, for me, I'm playing in France, so with the way the selection's been, you know, it can't be at the front of my mind. My focus has got to be playing for Clermont, but I'd be lying if I said it wasn't a goal one day to hopefully get in that gold jersey.
Play against the Lions, represent your country in a home World Cup.
Play against Demo, mate, if he makes it.
you're calling him Demo, which I like. That's a fairly straightforward nickname. Jack Dempsey, Demo. Get it. Am I right in saying your nickname's Nobby? And if so, why?
Oh, I've got no idea. You're right in saying that's my nickname. So I went to, back in my university days at Sydney Uni, I went to John's College, great institution. When you rock up as a freshman first week of O week, you get given a fresher t-shirt just with a cattle ear tag and a nickname on it. And they're normally pretty crude. I don't know where they got mine from, but I haven't been able to get to the bottom of it. But it's stuck till this day. In that environment, no one knows each other's names, so everyone just uses the nicknames and score from there.
Has it travelled all the way to Clermont?
Yeah, it has. It's unbelievable.
I like this. The idea that you can just get a t-shirt printed and that becomes your nickname. Should we create one, Johnny? You can be fire. No, ice,
I don't
try.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We had a massive fresher intake. I think there was like 80 new students at the college because the year before there was a few hazing scandals and they sort of wiped the decks and brought a few new ones in. So I think they had too many nicknames to come up with.
Yeah, you can't be giving self-designated nicknames. I played with a scrum half called Mike Blair, who was Scottish, played for the British and Irish Lions as well, decent scrum. His nickname the whole way through was Blade, which actually I thought was quite cool. And then his youngest brother, who's like 10 years younger than us, was like, shit, that's really cool. I'm going to make up my own nickname, Flame. And he's still to this day called Flame. But like, it's too cool. You can't be making up your own nickname. That's ridiculous.
That's a yellow card. Though.
Any other good nicknames in the Clermont side or not?
In the Clermont side? Thomas Lavanini. Apparently, like, they call him Lingua or something because he's got a massive tongue. I think it means tongue in Spanish. You see photos of his tongue's hanging out. So that's a pretty good one.
Mate, back to rugby. You are away to Racing this weekend. They pitched up and beat Cast in Cast at the weekend. They've got their internationals back. Le Garec is back with them. What are you expecting in Paris this weekend?
Yeah, I think getting those few internationals back with Le Garec, Fiku, as you said, even Gimbert, the 10, they play a really high speed brand of rugby. I think they've probably struggled a little bit when they've been missing those few boys over the last month or so. But as you said, good coming off a good winning cast on the synthetic under the roof, expecting a high ball in play, a lot of running. So yeah, hopefully we can go and get the job done and upset their party.
You mentioned the stadium. Did you play there last season?
No, I was 24th man, didn't play.
Well, you enjoyed the party afterwards. It turns into a nightclub afterwards. So 24th yeah, man, cool. Arguably, it's good.
They roll the DJ in the bar on under the post and then let the crowd on. I actually got a mate coming from London to the game this week. So he's pretty excited, I know, for the match day experience. So I'll see how we go. Definitely a very good team, obviously, with their coach, Lancaster, a lot of talented players. So, but I mean, we've got a great team as well. So we're certainly confident we can go and get the job done.
Talking about the stadium, we've spoken about it quite a lot. It is amazing. It's so unique, so different to all other rugby stadiums. And obviously Stuart Lancaster's got to sort of work with that and build a team that kind of environment can benefit. He's obviously early days. Comparing it to like a Toulon that's very difficult to go to, or a Clermont that has got such history and the kind of numbers and the mad passionate support, it might be difficult for you to say, but it doesn't strike me as the most... It's a cool place to go, right? As an opposition place, it's not like necessarily the most intimidating place to go.
Well, I think like technically with the synthetic surface, we're seeing like the play a really fast style of rugby, bring their speed men into the game. Obviously, with their wingers, they've got electric speed out there. They're 9-10, very skillful. So with the synthetic, you get a lot more pay out of your change of direction. So I actually like playing on it from an outside back point of view. Yeah, you get good pay out of your change of direction. So that's a threat, their speed men out wide and their ability to move the ball. So as much as you say it's not an intimidating place to go, I think it's a different surface. So it adds a different element to the game, and they really know how to use that surface well.
Last question from me, mate. Couple of transfer rumours. I was wondering if your phone had been buzzing, boys asking you about the top 14. You got Tani Tupou Tonginthor, rumoured to Montpellier. Nearly deal done. You've also got Jake Gordon, rumoured to be heading to Perpignan. So wondering if any of the boys have been on the phone, ask you, what's the top 14 like? Should I move to France?
Oh, don't worry. There's plenty of boys on the phone asking about that, the way rugby is these days. but no, I don't know Taniela. So they'll need a big checkbook to get him. And I'm not sure about Jakey. I think he's captain of the TAR, so he's got a big job to do there. And he's got to secure that 9 jersey for the Wallabies. So I hope that's his priority.
Mate, did you see their game against Drua?
Yeah, that's got to be the toughest away trip in world rugby, I reckon.
Why so? Talk us through it.
Mate, we used to go and play NRC there, which was NRC. I know it was sort of the same level as the Mitre 10, or same like under Super Rugby. So if you didn't get picked for Wallabies, you'd go and play NRC. And that's where the Drua first came about. We'd go over there, mate. The crowds would be absolutely pumping. There'd be Fijians up in trees on the fence screaming, and, you know, it'd be 35 degrees, but then it'd pour rain and the deck was real heavy, like really aggressive opponents, of course. So, yeah, very daunting place to play. Yeah, it's just a shame. I did watch the replay. Tars came back at the end, went to Golden Point, which I think is very exciting for that competition. Tane missed the shot in front. And then what about that drop goal from, was it Valentini? Propped off his right, then squared up and just sort of toe-poked it over, I think.
Incredible. And also, what a story for Drua as well. Like, what a scalp to take. It's absolutely incredible.
I also saw that 22, we beat the Drua in Sydney. And I think Darren must have said, oh, we didn't beat the Chicago Bulls. I saw Mick Byrne with his cap on. I thought, how good's that? Sport needs more of that, especially rugby.
And you can't confirm or deny that those Wallabies Johnny mentioned might or might not be heading to the top 14. But he mentioned earlier on that you've signed a new deal. So you're obviously settled in Clermont. You're happy over there.
Yeah, I'm locked down here, mate. So not going anywhere anytime soon. I don't know. We'll see what happens, eh? I'd like to have a few more mates over here to have a beer with. So we'll see what happens.
Especially scattered around the country as well, so you can stay on the couch when you're over there.
Yeah, exactly. Getting even if you're not playing an away game, try and sneak into 24th man and then stay behind for a few beers. Nah, we'll see what happens. Obviously, I'd like to see as many Aussies, to be honest, stay in the Super Rugby and put their best foot forward for making the Wallabies as strong as possible. And obviously, the TAR's got a lot of mates still back there, so want to see them do well, of course.
Well, it's obviously going well for you over there. Congratulations on the new deal. Hopefully, you continue to flourish at Clermont. If Joe Schmidt doesn't give you a call, do that family tree. Johnny is desperate for you to be Scottish.
Oh, my fiance is full Aussie as well, so I think that chance is gone anyway.
We tried our best, Johnny. What can you do?
We're not interested in your fiance, mate. We don't want her to play. We're interested. I was going to say, she doesn't count.
She's probably faster than me.
Mate, thank you so much for joining us. It's been epic. Good luck this weekend. And hopefully, if you go on to do great things and catch playoffs, semis, and top 14, a little Brennus, we'll catch up with you again later in the season.
Cheers, boys. Appreciate it.
Well, that was varied, Johnny. Camp drafting. I had no idea what that is.
I still don't know what camp drafting is, but I'm fairly sure I'd be terrible at it. But great to have him on. Really good lad, good talker. And he's going well. Like, why wouldn't he get a chance to play for the Wallabies? He's excellent. Every time I turn on the TV and watch him for Clermont, it's been an up and down season on the whole, but he's been one of those sort of hidden gems that's been great for them. So yeah, great to have him on. Good lad. And he's definitely good enough to get that cap for the Wallabies, 100%.
And he's from Dundee, but he ain't Scottish.
Yeah, and I don't think it's the right Dundee, mate. I think it's probably the nice Dundee. It's the nice Dundee. That's the problem.
We mentioned a couple of rumours to Alex. So any more you've heard about?
So Tani Tupou, Tongan Thor to Montpellier. Billy Vunipola to Montpellier. We talked a little bit about that last week.
Someone done or not?
Don't know, but it's kind of ominous. If you're Sam Simmons, Sam Simmons was awesome for them again. And again, I say awesome. They were shambolic collectively, but Sam Simmons was good. Created and got on the end of two tries. Mako Vunipola.
He could be going with him, right? Or not?
Potentially, but like the weird thing is, would you take, when you say go with him, going with him to Montpellier?
Well, that's the word over here, but I mean, I don't know. They must have a lot of cash and a be lot able of cash. To fit these guys in.
But that's one of the few clubs that could stump up that amount of cash. Also, there's the, I mean, I get it for Billy and his pomp you would take, right? Big bulldozer, but he's not physically going to get any better. He's past his prime. I'm not sure that's been cruel, but Mako's the same and he's a loose head. So taking them both, they're probably going to have to, it's a big check that's going to get written for both of them. Wazea Naithalevu to Sale to replace Manu Tuilagi, who has gone the other way across the channel. He's come to Bayonne.
That one's been announced and he'll be decent, presumably. I know he's at the latter end of his career as well, but in terms of a replacement for Manu, yeah,
he's a beast. He's an absolute beast. He's 6'4", runs like the wind, really smart lines. I think he was close to being the record try scorer for Stade Francais, or is the record try scorer for Stade Francais. He is an absolute beast. He'll be great in the Prem because he'll be bigger than everyone, simply. And when he gets going, he's absolutely insane. Caleb Timu, another one that was announced today to Colomier. He's unattached after being World Cup joker at Clermont. He was at Montpellier and Bordeaux previously. And then Perpignan, they're still in the hunt for a scrum half. I mentioned Jake Gordon has been one of their targets. They're looking at Ali Price, who British and Irish Lions scrum half, was at Glasgow, went to Edinburgh. They're also looking at Danny Kerr, who announced his international retirement today as we record this podcast. So lots of movement, lots of nearly duns, potentially duns. But yeah, it's that time of year again. Exciting. And yeah, some big salaries getting thrown about. So hopefully we get a few more foreigners of top quality over in the top 14 for next season.
Yeah, probably shouldn't link those two things, Danny Kerr announcing his international retirement, because he is 37 and he wants to spend more time with his family. It's a kind of natural at the end of the Six Nations with a tour to New Zealand and a rebuild. It's the kind of time that you might expect, but it's interesting that he is being linked in France to that move and the timing.
Well, he was linked to Biarritz not so long ago. But then obviously had his head focused on, you know, what was not a last dance, but incredible to be called back up and be part of the England setup over the past year. Like, he could go anywhere, couldn't he? I know he's 37, but he's still playing extremely well. The question for him is, with everything that he's got set up with BBC and media, does he want to do one more year at Quinn's and call it quits? Does he want to stop now? Or does he want to have that family experience, take 2 years out in the south of France and do something completely different? But only Danny and his family know the answer. I'm sure the decision will come fairly soon, but it'd be great to see somebody of his quality, his caliber in the top 14. And he's a good lad as well. So it'd be great to have him on the podcast.
Yeah, it would. And one more round of top 14 action before a couple of weeks of European rugby, or Champions Cup and Challenge Cup, as we should call it now. What games catch your eye in particular?
I'm looking forward to seeing how Montpellier react after getting absolutely stuffed in Toulon. They're home to Stade Francais. Oyonnax are away to La Rochelle. That
doesn't catch my eye too much, I'm not going to lie, John.
It's ominous. But La Rochelle, again, in the hunt for top six, whilst also want to finish strong before going off on European rugby, right, to back themselves in both comps. So they want that to be a 5-point win. Perpignan Cast again, tight down the other end. Looking forward to that one. Bayonne against Toulon, that's down in San Sebastian on Sunday night. Mm. So I always look forward to those ones down at that Anatea Stadium.
We spoke about their home form, Johnny. Does that not take a bit of that home advantage away from them, or a lot of it away from them?
Well, the last time I saw them lose at home, inverted commas, was at that stadium against Pau. So yes, it does, but it's such a big boost to the coffers. They make so much money taking a game. They double the gate. So a big opportunity for them financially, but does that put their home record at peril? Yes and no, as in Jean Daugier is still a year and a half that they haven't been beaten, whereas there's maybe more of a chance, or it seems a neutral ground for Toulon going there. So yep, that's a big one on Sunday night. And Racing Clermont, spoken about with Alex, looking forward to that one as well for the obvious reasons. And Toulouse-Pau. Toulouse, again, they were absolutely ridiculous in Bordeaux. Probably should have won the game. At home to Pau, who'll be looking to punch back again after losing to Clermont. So, mate, there's five or six fixtures there, all absolutely epic. And looking forward to catching them this weekend.
If those were as close as last weekend's games, we're in for a treat. Thanks, Johnny. A big thanks to Alex Newsom for joining us. And thanks to all you guys for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe. Leave us a nice review if you can. Check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, Johnny.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.